Thanksgiving in America is grounded in that iconic image of the first Thanksgiving dinner, of the strangers and the saints, the Wampanoag warriors, and the Patuxet Indian, all these people gathered together to share a meal. I'm sure there was a contract that had been written, but not by all the people there. There was a covenant made. Since a covenant, of course, is not a legal contract or a legal agreement, it's more of a verbal agreement that binds people together into some community to serve a purpose that feeds both. And that covenant didn't last that long, but it's an essential grounding of our understanding of what it means to be Unitarian Universalist, to be religious people, to make a covenant, to create community. Despite all that divides us, despite all the division and violence, the warfare, the bullets in churches and fires and doors, we seek over and over again to reform the covenant, to be at one with all human beings, to create a community. And we hold up this image of this first meal. It really wasn't part of the American lexicon, really, until about the 1840s, when the journals of Bradford, old copies were found, and the other books that were written about those first days, and suddenly it became a part, especially in the 1840s, as America was feeling its own internal tensions moving towards the terrors of the war within our nation. We were struggling to say, what does it mean to be Americans? And that's when these images came up, and the images of the pilgrims sailing bravely against the elements to come to America. And people ask questions like, how much did the Mayflower weigh? Which, of course, is a Puritan. And of course, people would ask, why did the pilgrims sail to America? And the answer is because planes hadn't been invented yet. We want to be a family. And there's this image in that first meal of all these different people gathered together and sharing. You notice in the piece that Jeanette read earlier, he's talking about how the settlers, the pilgrims, and their companions went out and were shooting guns as part of a recreation, and then the Indians show up. So obviously they're having this big feast. They're having a feast for themselves alone, and they're off showing off their weaponry. And the Massasoit, the king of the Wampanoag people, brings 70 of his warriors. It's not necessarily a happy gathering, and yet they make it a happy gathering. They go out and they kill deer and they bring them as gifts. And some of you may be going to family Thanksgivings, and you may feel a similar anxiety about tensions. Is this a setup? I remember once having a member of my congregation come back after a Thanksgiving dinner and found out that everyone in the family had decided to try to convert this person back to the more conservative form of Baptist religion that they had been raised in, and were trying to pull them away from Unitarianism, and she had to process that whole unpleasant experience, how hard she worked to try not to get angry. But they didn't get angry then. They had that one meal. And each year we hold up that meal. We hold it up in a ritual here where we share cornbread made by our little ones, and we share cider to evoke this image of the family being together. Families have always got into fights. According to Jewish and Christian scriptures, even the first two brothers, Cain and Abel, did not get along too well. And we don't often think of families dancing together. Although sometimes I've seen weddings where everyone is dancing gladly, whole extended families coming together. A couple weeks ago, someone gave me a quote from George Bernard Shaw, who said, "If you cannot get rid of the family skeletons, skeleton, you might as well make it dance. Somehow working through the tensions and trying to reform that covenant, that image of family, of togetherness, of wholeness. I remember when I first started in Unitarian Universalism, there was a group that I went to, we would dance, do folk dances. I can still remember singing Hebrew words as we did a circle dance. I can still remember the grapevine step. It was a sense of unity and of joy, of celebration of life. I've gone to Native American circle dances. And in the very center, of course, there are these people, very elaborate young people who are doing very difficult, detailed steps with heavy costumes on. But then there are other people that are kind of around the edges or that might be following them. And then there's other people standing around and there are people talking and there are the elders who can no longer dance. All of those are part of the dance. They all understand that they are each playing a role in framing the dance. It's not just the dancer who dances for all of us, as one quote puts it, but that we are all dancing together, creating that sense of community. I love that moment in the movie, in the play, Fiddler on the Roof, when the Russian men and the Jewish men all start dancing together and singing together and singing L'Chaim to life later, the song of dancing together, celebrating life. It's a great image of unity. I had a man who once told me, we were talking about war, and he started to emphasize that if we could only prove that Noah had definitely existed, and he had images from Mount Ararat in Turkey that kind of showed that maybe there was this remnants of a ship there, and he said, hey, maybe if we could just prove that that was Noah, then everyone would all of a sudden be one great family, and we would all celebrate together. And I said, I think we better start trying to act that way now rather than waiting for the literal proof of Noah. How many of you know about Andalusia? There's an area in Spain, Andalusia, but for 700 years, when it was under Moorish Muslim rule, there was an allowance for much tolerance, and that slowly developed into a shared cultural heritage between Jews and Muslims and Christians. Jews had a very strong and vibrant place in that part of Spain until later the Christians came and a certain variety of Christian, which is very exclusive and narrow and wants to get rid of the other. But during that time, there was this connection, togetherness. And Rebecca Parker, who up until a couple of years ago was the president of our school for ministry, Star King School for the Ministry, talks about when a Moroccan ministry of culture came and visited the Star King School. And he was so happy to meet living Unitarians because for years he had used this word Unitarian. But it was a word to describe those long ago Andalusians who lived in unity with one another under the image of the unity of God. For him, Unitarians were these historical people who lived in unity together across great differences and began to identify with one another, work together, develop a shared culture, a sense of being a family of a sort. And he was so glad to see people who religiously were still trying to live that out under that name, that image of unity. And our extended religious family includes Jews and Muslims, as well as atheists and existentialists and liberal Christians. Includes all Christians, really, even those Christians that try to kick us out of the family over and over again. Dancing with them can be awkward, but it's inevitable. It's either dance with them or fight with them. There are some modern scholars who debate whether Judaism and Christianity are really separate religions. There's a story that somewhere around the second century made it very clear that Jews were no longer welcome in Christian churches and that Christianity was the true embodiment of God's promises, the God's people. But long after the second century, you can see evidence and stories and historical remnants and traditions of Christians who are still trying to work closely and identify closely with Jews. In Susan J. Ritchie's book, recent book that came out a couple years ago, Children of the Same God, it's a book that's subtitled The Historical Relationship Between Unitarianism, Judaism, and Islam. She says that the proto-Unitarians were those Arians, those Christians who wanted to emphasize the humanity of Jesus, not simply out of some intellectual engagement with Christology, but because they were in relationship with Jewish people, and they understood that the new Trinitarian theology, this invention of Trinitarian theology, was going to be driving a wedge between themselves and Judaism. They understood themselves as being in deeply rooted historical relationship with the Jewish people and with the promises that God made to the Jewish people, and felt that the integrity of Christianity depended upon that relationship. That was part of the theological debate, that desire to remain in the family together. It's an interesting little book. You should look it up. Children of the Same God notes that the idea of theological pluralism that we hold so dear in the 20th century is really not a new addition to Unitarianism, has never been new. It's always been endemic, essential to who we are and how we live in the world. And that's what universalism is all about as well. One family, one people, one human race under the unity of one absolute truth. We may now not use the word, some of us don't use the word God to define that singular truth. Maybe they say it's just the universe. Maybe it's human nature. But still, a unity, a wholeness, and one human family dancing together on this good earth. Of course, it requires more than just a desire to be together. It requires more than simply an interest. That when I raised that notion about the whole Arian, Trinitarian, Unitarian controversy of the early 325, the Council of Nicaea, there's an intellectual debate that's going on, an intellectual element you have to study. You can't just say, oh, all religions are the same, because then what you do is obliterate the unique insights, the unique revelations, unique practices of each religion. You have to come together. You have to somehow find a way of understanding who it is that you're in relationship with, to really honor their difference in order to be in community with them. I've been a part of many different clergy groups throughout my life, and especially since I've become a minister, interfaith groups. And I can remember this one meeting in Colorado Springs. We were all meeting to talk about, again, it was food, gathering in food, is an Operation Food Search program that we were doing together. We met at the Jewish synagogue. There's only one synagogue, so it's the Reconservadox synagogue. Those who understand Judaism understand that. The Reconservadox rabbi, he said, I'm a Reconservadox rabbi. Because he had to do everything. You know, he had to apply the whole family of Judaism was his family, because there was only one in that city. And at the beginning of that meeting, we had the Jewish rabbi and all these Christian and Unitarian ministers were there, and Unitarian Universalists, and he took us to see the Torah. We got it out and opened the Torah, read from the Hebrew passage, and then he, as the tradition demands, explained what that passage meant in the context of having these other people of other religions in his synagogue and us working together. It's a beautiful moment. And then later we were talking about this food program that we were trying to do, and one of the Christian ministers stood up and said, all of us as Christians understand that God has called us to serve the needy. And he just didn't even hear what he had said. All of us as Christians. He had just, in the synagogue with the rabbi right in front of him. The way in which we become mindless about religion. We need to think, we need to be attentive, we need to be aware. So I was preparing for the sermon, I came across a quote attributed to Confucius who said, "Don't give a sword to a man who can't dance." I had to think about that a little bit. But giving an opportunity to be in a room with some other people and you got a very dangerous weapon, realize, learn how to be careful. Learn how to be graceful. Learn how to move with other people in a way that you do not accidentally harm someone. and to be aware of differences. Our particularities, our differences, they all matter. And our history is unique. Often Unitarian Universalists, who presented ourselves as being about these big general principles, these glorious principles, beautiful principles that anybody could really sign on to. But we also have this unique history. We have people like William Greenleaf Elliott for this congregation. When you're a member of First Unitarian Church, you become a part of Elliott's lineage, and you're suddenly in relationship with that person, and Abby, his wife, and Abby Elliott and her life, and how she lived, and what she lived for, and how, and what values guided her actions. They shape who we are, these little stories. And Channing, and Olympia Brown, first woman or denominationally ordained in America. Judith Murray, powerful worker and reformer in the early 1700s. And humanists like Sophia Faas and Kurt Vonnegut. We have a particular history of those people who have claimed this particular name and identity. There's something unique about us. It gives us a sense of clear individual identity, just as each of us have a unique identity that we carry. But the point of that is not to isolate ourselves. The point of that identity is not to separate. It's to be clear about who we are together with others. I was once in an interfaith group, and what they did was they decided at the beginning of the group to light a candle. They would lit a little candle that had the symbol, Ottoman symbol of Islam. Years later, I had a Muslim tell me that the Ottoman symbol of Islam, which is the crescent and the star, is not a universal symbol of Islam. That really the symbols are really not good for anywhere in Islam because of things within the Quran. But if you're going to have anything, it's the word Allah, that God is the one thing that brings all Muslims together. But in that group, we were able to have that little star and the crescent moon and a little votive candle, and we light that and we say, we are grateful for the wisdom of the Islamic heritage. May that wisdom be present with us today. And then we light a candle for the Jewish heritage, the little Star of David, and we say, may that be present with us today. And we lit a candle for Christian heritage. And we kind of went down the line, number of different religious traditions. And at the end, there's one, and it was for all other religions. And I was trying to figure out, am I in the all other religions candle, or am I in the Christian candle, or am I in the Jewish candle, or, where am I? And eventually I realized that there were no literal Taoists in the group, and we were lighting a candle for Taoism. So I said, let's take out the Taoist candle and make that the Unitarian Universalist candle. It was a very important moment for me because it said, I have an identity. I have a unique and particular identity. I bring a particular heritage, certain traditions and habits and style of worship that is mine, that is makes who I am and what I how I'm giving my life and to what I give my life, and the people. It determines who the people are that I gather with each Sunday. Very important, significant to realize that I'm not just generally across everything, but that because of my unique identity, I'm able then to understand and appreciate and be in relationship with Muslims. And I remember one Muslim man, he was talking about how, I was talking about how my daughter had been sick and I'd been worried about her and she was better and she'd gotten better. And he said, Allah is merciful. This is the opening of the Quran, to God the merciful. That image of mercy for him was grounded in just the most ordinary things, like a child getting better, like this day being beautiful. The gratefulness of life was expressed for him, and the goodness of God is expressed for him in that little phrase. And it deepened my own sense of spirituality by understanding his. One of the things that I got from Richie's book, talking about how we are all children of the same God, is that it reminded me that our great Unitarian king, the king who declared the Edict of Tolerance, became king only under Ottoman authority. It was the great Suleiman the Great, a Muslim leader, who allowed him to be in this semi-independent autonomous state of Transylvania. And it was really because of Muslim tolerance within Islamic states that Sigismund was inspired to come up with the Edict of Toleration. The difference being, of course, that within an Islamic state, there's still a state religion, whereas that within his, there was no one state religion, even though he was Unitarian. A sense of what it means to be in community, how we come together in community, the difficulties of those relationships, the tensions and discomforts that we've felt. But I have gone to Hindu worship long enough so that some of those chants, those Sanskrit chants, had stopped sounding sort of alien and odd and became comfortable and familiar. And I have knelt down with Muslims until it no longer becomes a weird thing that other people do, but something that I have done with my friends. And I go to Christian worship, and it no longer is their odd theology. Sometimes I'm doing a lot of little internal Christian dialogue about what's going on theologically and the words that they're saying. But I know that I'm with my friends, and that what is more important is to affirm that we are part of one family, one holy family. Whether it's talking about heteronormative oppression and gay and lesbian or transgender or gender non-conforming people in the world, or whether it's talking about racism, all the ways in which we divide ourselves and separate ourselves and forget that we are all one family, to come together. Tonight, this afternoon at 3, the Holy Ground Collaborative is holding a concert right next door over at the Christ Scientist building, and even Unitarian Universalists will be singing something. I don't know if they'll be singing out of our tradition or just out of the folk tradition. It's Janet and Mark will be singing on behalf of us, representing us in this interfaith community. I encourage all of you to think about coming to that. There's an Interfaith Thanksgiving program on Tuesday evening, November 24th, at the First Congregational Church in Webster Groves. I'd encourage you to go and experience that. There's an interfaith prayer service in solidarity with the UN Convention on Climate Change that's going to be held on December 1st. There are so many activities going on all the time. And I think that Unitarian Universalists, at least in my experience, has been that when we go out and engage in interfaith relationships, we actually not only facilitate a deeper, better, more respectful community because we're more willing and open to really understand the different religions, but that we understand what it means to be a Unitarian Universalist more deeply, and we understand what Thanksgiving means, to be thankful for human diversity, thankful for the holy traditions of goodness and peace and faith in times of fear and danger and division, to come together, to share meals, to affirm that we are all one community is a radical thing to do. We talk about these radicals right now, and radicalization of youth, how they become radicals and they begin to pick up arms and do terrible things. We need to be radicalized in the other direction, to engage in the radical work of getting to know not only one another, listening deeply to our own religious journeys, and sometimes coming into difficulties and tensions because we're doing that, but then to see in and through and beyond those differences to that deeper, more powerful unity, to be radicals for love and thankfulness and togetherness. This is our power. This is our hope. This is what we are called to do. And as one of my colleagues wrote, if recognizing the interdependence of all life, recognizing that interdependence, we strive to build community, the strength we gather will be our salvation. If you are black and I am white, ultimately it will not matter. If you are female and I am male, in the end, it will not matter. If you are older and I am younger, it will not matter. If you are progressive and I am conservative, it will not matter. If you are straight and I am gay, it will not matter. If you are Christian and I am Jewish, it will not matter. If we join spirits as brothers and sisters, the pain of our aloneness will be lessened, and that does matter. It is in this spirit that we build community and we move towards restoration. So now we're going to call the elements forward. We're going to call for our children to come and bring us the little first and second. It was such a joy to be with the first and second graders and to see them making, stirring the dough and talking about cracking eggs. They've all gotten to the place where they can crack eggs without throwing all the shells in it. You'll forgive if one or two shell pieces came in. On this special day, we recall that beautiful moment of peace, the feast of gratitude between the pilgrim people and their friends, the Patuxet Catholic Squanto of Massasoit and all his Wampanoag warriors. We uphold the hope that this memory brings strength to our spirits. We eat cornbread this day, baked by our children, because corn is the common grain of North America. It has always fed the people of this land. And because of the kindness of Squanto, it sustained the pilgrims in the harshest time of winter famine. So may we appreciate more fully the gift of life and friends. And we drink apple cider on this day because unfiltered, unsweetened, unfermented, the apple juice reminds us of the simple, pure pleasures of life squeezed from this good earth, moistening the bread of life, helping us eat it more easily. We eat together and drink together and worship to remember that God, the Holy, is one, that the earth is one, and we would now be one as we join in drinking and eating together.